Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show, they're not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. I hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchy. Very special guest today, returning champion and friend of the show, CEO of Right Stuff, Sean Kleckner is here. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for letting me on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Always happy to have you back. So you're gearing up for the holiday season, right?
Yep, yeah. The holiday is definitely upon us now, and this is where the madness begins and continues on for, you know, the next 60 to 90 days.
So just out of curiosity, exactly how, like, is it just like a shipping thing where, like, you're just getting more orders than normal and that's why it's crazy? Is that basically?
Well, I mean, you've got craziness in a number of ways. I mean, obviously the whole point is to, you know, have people be excited about the things that they want to purchase for themselves or for, you know, family or friends or whatever. So there's the craziness in terms of the marketing pieces that need to be put out on a specific period of time, or the, you know, the stuffers that we're doing, or special offers that we put together, or, you know, like you said, more shipments that need to be going out, which means there's more product that's coming in to make sure that we have the product available so that it can be shipped out. I mean, I got truckloads of, you know, just corrugated boxes showing up that need to be put someplace. So, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that goes into planning and building out a holiday promotion. The biggest of which is the, you know, just having a plan as to what you're going to put on sale, how you're going to do it, how you're going to market it, and then the flow of orders and, you know, credit card declines and, you know, customer service requests and so on. You just consider it to be the amount of work that you normally do, except that it's, you know, threefold or fivefold, depending on, you know, how much stuff is coming at you at once.
And, like, approximately how big is Right Stuff at this point? Like, how many employees do you have?
I want to say we're sitting around 75 or so. But during the holiday season, we do bring a lot of extra labor on. So, I mean, we'll have, you know, lots of extra people beyond our normal staff.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a lot to deal with.
Yeah, well, so you also have staffing. You got to get the people here. And fortunately, we haven't had the horrible winter weather come in too badly yet, although it's been a lot colder here than it has been in years past.
Oh, that sucks. It's been a lot on fire out here in Southern California.
Yeah.
a little opposite. Before we get into the business stuff, I wanted to ask you briefly, like, I'm not sure that maybe I've already asked you this before. Forgive me if I'm repeating a question here, but how did you start this company?
Oh, I mean, in terms of back in the old days. Okay. Yeah. Well, when I was in high school, I hooked up with my former business partner who was in the computer business. And so I was working at a company that was building and selling computer networks. And one of the things that my old partner was really interested in was some of these older cartoon shows like Astro Boy. And as he was picking these different shows up, you know, there was a, you know, discussion on how could we commercialize this. I mean, if he's interested in it, you know, and then they're great programs, how do we, you know, how do we look at people other than him that would be interested? I mean, obviously there's, you know, a lot of people that watch this show when they were kids, and the whole video market at that point was really not sell through. It was more rental. So we were trying to look at, well, how do we get this product out to the people? And because we couldn't really get product into the store the way I wanted to at the time, we pretty much were selling by mail order. as time progressed, we did get our product into, you know, the larger home video market stores, the Suncoasts, all that kind of stuff. But back in the original time, you know, back when there was one employee or two employees, we were down to selling mostly by phone and by mail.
Right. And so, but personally for you, did you basically just see the quality of these shows and were like also into it?
Well, I mean, I'd watched other anime shows myself. I mean, I remember watching Dirty Pair about this time frame, if you think about the mid to late 80s.
Right.
You know, but if you wanted to watch newer anime shows, there wasn't much of anything. If you think about the time frame we're talking about, which is around 1987 to 89, the commercial availability of anime was very limited.
I know.
You'd have to get into, you know, you'd maybe see some, you had some products. Animego had a couple products, I think, somewhere around there. Viz had just really started. U.S. Renditions was also putting out a couple of titles. So you had some of the OVAs that were being out, and then you had some of the bigger firms that had kind of made bastardized versions of some of the, you know, the movie content and stuff that had been there that they'd kind of made hack job dubs for. Streamline had just started, for example. So you're not really, there just wasn't a whole lot of there, the content. So I mean, if you wanted to watch this stuff, it was import it from Japan or trade tapes with people. You know, that's just kind of what that was in that time frame. So, I mean, I remember when I was that age looking at a lot of, you know, 80s anime. I mean, and that was just the time frame because that's when it was happening. So I do remember, and I think I still have my old Dirty Pair Project Eden Laserdisc. So I bet it's still sitting somewhere in my basement.
Yeah, well, that is how it was back then. But it, you know, obviously you've sort of built, I would call it an empire, you know, out of that. Which is,
well, I mean, so I mean, when we started again, the whole point of the stuff that we were selling was more nostalgia oriented. I was familiar with anime, but not the level that I, you know, once I got into, I knew some of the shows, but once I got into and started looking at some of these programs, and as the same time as some of these companies started doing some releasing, I mean, CPM started releasing product at that time frame, you know. Now there was this whole world that was opening up of new programs. And then, you know, that was also the age of the, you know, you wanted a VHS tape, you either got the dub version or you got the subtitle version because, you know, you couldn't put both on the same thing. Like, you know, everybody really kind of takes for granted today.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, fascinating history aside, how are things going at Right Stuff now? What would you say your best sellers are?
You know, I tell you what, there's a lot of really great content coming out right now. I would say the fans have more opportunity to watch more diverse content today than probably ever before. Mm-hmm. There is so much stuff coming out in the market through, you know, whether it's home video releases or streaming or the simulcasts that just continue to grow. I'm looking at some of the things that we had that were really strong here this last, I don't want to say, you know, a couple quarters. I'm thinking of things like Fate Stay Night. You know, the new Heaven's Field is out.
Right.
Silent Voice finally came out. My Hero is going to continue to be strong. I mean, that just continues to, you know, go into the sky. So, I mean, you do have some of the perennials where you get into that. The Sailor Moon Stars is out now, which, you know, was a long time in coming. But you can go back to things that are coming into, you know, play that are new, like the I Want to Eat Your Pancreas, you know, movie. That was really interesting how it came out and did so well. Your Name, you know, all these new independent film things that are coming. I mean, it's pretty cool to see so much content coming out. If you just look at it, you know, the old standbys. I mean, the new Dragon Ball movie came out and did really strong. So, if you look at the manga side, it's the same thing. You're looking at more My Hero, Promised Neverland, One Punch Man, Demon Slayer. I mean, there's it's interesting to see. You kind of have two tracks. You've got the content that continues to be renewed, this perennial, and then some of the new stuff that keeps coming out. That's you know, some of it from new players and some of it from, you know, people who are, you know, rising stars in the industry and are coming into their own.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like a flood, though. It's like a flood of content. There's so much.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it reminds me, you know, if you go back into the mid-90s and you would have 800 acquisitions announced at once, right?
Yeah.
And there was just so much content coming. Well, I mean, the market continues to expand, and as the market expands, more content can come out at once and still be consumed and not overwhelm things. I don't know that we're in a position of glut at this point, but you know, there's something for everyone. But there definitely is a lot more content available. And you know, keep in mind also, every year that we move forward, you know, there's all this new stuff that comes out, but there's still 20, 30 years worth of stuff before it that's always, you know, available. You know, I think this is an endemic problem in media as a whole. You know, there's no way that somebody could possibly watch every single thing ever made, right? I mean, that you have to kind of figure out how to tune that to your taste, or you know, we as sellers have to figure out what it is that you're interested in, try to recommend products that we think that you'd like. But it's not really possible, at least unless you don't have a job and don't have, you know, you have a lot of free time to watch every single thing that comes out each season these days.
I can't even imagine someone having that much time. There's 40 new shows every 3 months.
Yep. Like, and they all have, you know, 10, 12, you know, episodes and or more. And then you look at all the new stuff that's coming out, you know, just on the regular market, whether it's, you know, these different streaming services and new content that constantly pops up everywhere. I mean, there's a lot to watch. I mean, I remember thinking to myself, you know, years ago, well, there's nothing really I want to watch. And now it's like, well, there's 500 things. Where do I even start?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I agree with you on that one. It's hard to pick a place to even start when, like, you have a busy day job and you don't have time to watch that much stuff, and you turn on your TV and there's 400 streaming services and 400 new shows and all of that. Like, it's a lot. The industry.
Yeah, I think it can definitely be very overwhelming, I think, now, especially when you have all these different new streaming services launching. It's like, okay, well, I want to watch this show. Which streaming service is it on? You know, well, I don't have a subscription to that one, or so on. I think that may be a potential problem in the coming couple of years.
Yeah, maybe. As a physical media retailer, how do you feel about that? The streaming is so ubiquitous now. Like, how does that impact your business?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, in some ways, you have independent customers. Some customers only want to watch stuff on streaming. They don't really want to own anything. Maybe they don't have any space in their place, you know, to have anything. There are other people that are collectors that would like to own everything. So you have, you know, different customer types. So it's okay. You know, you serve those customers. You know, if you have, like, we have our content on a couple of the different streaming services, people can watch that. We also sell it on home media, just like the other vendors do. So you have to kind of look and tie your expectations to what different customer types that are out there are. The availability for people to watch something and then be able to buy it later because they want to watch it again or they want to own it, you know, that's always kind of a gamble. If you look at in the old days where, let's say, you went to the store and, you know, you had a box set on the shelf of Heat Guy J, and you really just, you don't know if you really want to watch it. It looks cool from the back outside, but you never seen any of it. So do you drop the $200, right? Where today you can say, well, I can watch one of the episodes on any number of different places, whether it's YouTube or Funimation, Crunchyroll, whatever. And if you like it, well, you can either buy it and keep it for yourself, watch the whole thing and then buy it later. I mean, there's a multitude of options. What I do see, and I think it's important to say, as you know, not just because we sell the content, but because the way that streaming services and other, you know, other content actually works. I mean, every one of these companies that are putting this content out does it as a license. Okay, a license has a finite term, and when that license expires, it generally is going to go away, right? You can sometimes renew it. You can sometimes it goes from party to party. You know, we might pick up a show that used to be from somebody else. But at some point, it's possible that show will just no longer be available. And so if you don't own it, you aren't going to stream it anywhere because it's not available. Right. So that is a particular piece that people have to keep in mind when they think, well, I love streaming, which is fine. You just have to kind of keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, no, I certainly keep that in the back of my mind. Like, I don't really trust the streaming services to make everything available to me all the time. Like, I definitely expect it to go away at some point. So if I really like something or want something, I will definitely get the physical copy.
Right.
And
well, even the physical copy is going to disappear. I mean, at some point you're going to be down to just buying it, you know, used from somebody, right? Because people are going to stop pressing the discs. I mean, the other thing I think that really helps is, I mean, if the streaming stuff is so ubiquitous, it's, you know, it uses a lot of bandwidth. Even these people, you know, people that have lots of bandwidth at their house, you know, to get that content to you, it really has to be compressed. I mean, to a significant extent. And I can definitely tell a difference if I pick up, you know, I'm going to go outside of anime for a second, but just say, like, I watched the last season of Game of Thrones on HBO, right? Mm-hmm. If I watch that at home and I watch it in the streaming, the quality is okay, but it's not near as crisp as picking up a Blu-ray of it.
Yeah, no, I
totally so there agree. there is definitely some value to being able to buy it on a storage medium versus taking it streamed.
I totally agree. That is definitely my feeling. Like, I don't know. I've been getting into 4K stuff, and like, even the 4K stream is more compressed than the disc itself. Like, if I put the disc in, I'm going to get the best experience. Like, period. That is
right.
Basically ironclad, so to speak.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Did you have anything that maybe didn't quite do as good as you thought, or like, you know, anything that maybe you had higher expectations for and it didn't quite meet them? Anything on the sales charts like that?
Well, I mean, we had some titles which I think could have performed better if we could get them. I mean, there was some supply chain challenges this year.
Oh yeah.
Which, you know, caused product to just not be easily available. But, you know, that's, I think, what my biggest challenge. I mean, it's very difficult to know what titles are gonna blow up into the sky unless they're a perennial title. You know, it's, I know if a new volume of My Hero comes out, it's going to go, you know, gangbusters.
Sure.
Where if, let's say, for example, you know, you get something like, let's say, Megalobox or something, it comes out, you don't know, you know, what kind of sales you're going to see on it. You kind of have to look at, well, did it well, do well on streaming? What are the customer types and so on? Or if we say that, you know, Tokyo Ghoul comes out, I mean, is it going to do super great based on the fact that the manga did well? I mean, it's a tough call to know what is an underperformer, and is it that just that performs at a level that really, that's kind of just at the level it was going to perform at, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, I think that's a difficult piece to tie. I mean, one thing I will say, and I wouldn't say this as a more of a surprise, but I mean, we did a co-release on some vinyl albums recently, and I actually was been just absolutely delighted to see the number of those that moved out the door. It just shows that whole concept of vinyl is back is definitely there. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a thing. I mean, look, I live in Los Angeles and go to a record store constantly. So, like, that's no surprise to me. That's like, oh, yeah, of course your vinyl releases do well. Like, you know, it depends on how limited it is. And there are hardcore collectors of that sort of thing. So there's a built-in audience. Like,
it's interesting in a digital age, though, that would blow up to the sky that it has in the course of the last 3 or 4 years. I definitely like listening to a record myself. I mean, it's great, but it's not something that you don't expect people to go backwards in time and technology. You know, in terms of just utilizing technology, so it's kind of fun.
Sure.
The whole nostalgia factor ties on it there as well.
But also, your home setup now can be so advanced that.
Oh, yeah.
You will get such better sound out of a good vinyl. Like, it's just gonna sound so much better. It's similar to what we were talking about with, you know, discs. Like, it's gonna sound better, definitely, if you have the right setup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's another great example of that. I mean, you know, I would love to see, you know, more of the UHD discs out in the market, but there's this very limited amount of players that play them. And, you know, so you're down to more kind of like the vinyl, you're down to more of a, you know, a very collectible group that buys those releases.
Right. Basically, old people.
We like to call them the people that remember what it is to buy things.
Sure. It's maybe more the people who can afford to buy things. So we've seen some absolutely tremendous shifts in the anime industry over the last, let's say, 5 years. And mm-hmm. I feel like just in the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, we have seen major changes in the way the anime industry operates. And just my take is, like, now everything is owned by two or three giant mega conglomerates. It didn't used to be that way. Like, there used to be scrappier, sort of more independent companies. But now everything is owned mm-hmm. by these three or four companies. And I was wondering what your personal take on that was, and if you think it's good or bad, basically.
They're definitely, I mean, to take your point, back in the day when this stuff all started out, it was all small companies. You know, a lot of it was personality driven. It was, you know, acquiring content and bringing it over. These days it is a business, and the business is definitely moved towards more of a higher scale. And I think part of the changes there comes from the fact that the content itself has become more expensive. It's you can't run a little teeny shop these days and play with the simulcasts. I mean, there's a need to operate a streaming service for the simulcast. That's an expensive proposition. There is a need to have a significant acquisition budget to deal with, you know, all these new shows that are coming out each year. So, I mean, a lot of those changes, I think, have come just as an economic need more than anything else. And obviously the big interest on larger parties coming into the market is, you know, anime is a fan-driven market. It is a loyal market. It is one that, constantly is, new content is constantly being available for it and then being consumed. It's attractive because if you look at some of the other markets or other, other genres that are out there, I mean, they're not still in a growth mode where anime really continues to grow, right? That culture just continues to, whether it's the social culture of the convention circuit or it's the streaming availability, or it's, the fact that anime as a whole has had still steady, flat to steady growth in physical sales, where the rest of the market has seen that decline. Right. Some of it, I think, is economic because you do have a higher cost entry today. I mean, I would not recommend somebody decide to start an anime company today. I don't, unless you have a huge pocketbook. But the changes are good and bad. I mean, it creates, if you have a large company coming in, they're not as focused on the fan necessarily as when you had a smaller group of fans that were running the organization, for example. It has become more of a business-centric environment than it was previously.
Right, yeah. How do you feel about the recent very big news of Funimation being consolidated into Sony and Aniplex? How does that read to you?
Well, if I'm Sony and I have all these assets, I mean, and I can have economy of scale or I can leverage them with each other, I would certainly do that. I mean, you have to tie that also into, Mad Men Australia is part of that group. You go to the Manga UK is part of that group. So, it only makes sense to figure out ways that you can, leverage all those things together, either to cut down your costs or to be able to give opportunities to, say, your UK arm or your Australia arm or whatever with content that you're going to purchase. I mean, it makes sense. How it will change the model on the backside for, on a wholesale level or How the consumer interacts with that content, that kind of remains to be seen, because that's a fairly recent development. And I don't know that they've really completely executed on all that strategy yet.
Yeah, it's pretty new. It's pretty new. It's just it's such a major development that it's interesting to see. And I was, you know,
curious. Well, I mean, you should expect it. I mean, if I own all these things, I mean, why would I not figure out how to make them all work together to make me more money? I mean, that only makes sense.
Sure. I suppose that's true. So I wanted to ask a little bit about Gundam. How is Gundam going for you? Is it still
Still going strong? I mean, we haven't made it completely through the entire Gundam universe yet, but we're getting closer and closer as we go. So, you know, the bigger pieces are really out there. We're getting into the more recent content. You know, like Gundam Narrative that we'll have next year. One of the big pieces I know that people continue to ask, because I see it every time we have something posted or at the last couple of conventions I've been at, is, you know, why can't I have my Gundam Seed yet? And, you know, trust me, I would like to have that done too, but there's some issues in terms of that we've had to work through and getting the content. You know, they redubbed that show.
Right.
So, of course, we had to get all the stuff there. We had to wait for that to be finished, and then they had to schedule all the stuff that they wanted to do on their side with it. So we're kind of at the mercy of making sure that all the pieces are in place before we do our release. I mean, we have a lot of the work done, but once that's all ready to roll here next year, then, you know, you'll be seeing that come back. So that's kind of one of the last, I think, you know, big giant releases that were out there in the market on the, you know, that were broadcast back in the day. But, you know, we're still working our way through what's left of the Gundam universe that hasn't been released. There's not much left, but we'll keep going.
Cool. All right. And, those are still selling real good, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd say, you know, Gundam has been a fantastic, I mean, it's really kind of been an honor to work, with Sunrise on that show, and to, you know, to be able to give it, the treatment that we've been able to do. I mean, our folks here really are very focused on making sure that those products are released in a quality fashion. So I've been really pleased to see not only that, but the response from the fans and the sales on it. I mean, there are, you know, every day there's lots of Gundam leaving the building here. The people are very excited about it, and it's wonderful to see.
Nice. All right. Okay. Well, that does it for my questions. Do you want some questions from Twitter?
If that's all your questions,
yeah.
I'm open.
Sure. All right. Let's take some questions from Twitter here. From Anikuno, he asks, you promised to post a picture of the hat you put on potential show licenses at your AX panel this year. Where is the hat?
I will have to find the hat. It's apparently kept to the side at the moment.
All right, I think
I'll have to do that. I forgot about that.
You better find it. Also,
I better. Apparently, that's very important. People will want to buy copies of the hat. I probably sell as many of that as I do DVDs.
Okay, right. Also from Anikuno, what are the chances of seeing Dirty Pair on Blu-ray now that Japan has announced a release? I've been dying to get Project Eden in high def for a long time.
Well, anything can happen, sir.
Okay, so, all right. classic.
The likelihood is certainly higher if there's, you know, if there's the transfer on that disc is back from the original film, so it's pretty nice looking.
All right, well, hopefully we'll see it. Let's see. Cute Space Marine, I think that's the name. All right, are you looking into putting more digital titles on your storefront, perhaps partnering with someone like Bookwalker?
Are you talking like download to own type?
Like, yeah,
content?
Like, yeah, really, I understand. I think that's what they mean, like download to own, you know, like.
So they want to come to the site and be able to buy a digital product, in other words.
Yes.
You know, I have looked at that. I'm not really sure completely how, you know, how far we're going to go into that right now. But it's definitely on the radar.
Okay. CC Takato asks, are there, with the new Funimation streaming deal, are there any plans to stream some of Nozomi's recent dub work, like the Aria dub or the upcoming Emma dub?
Most likely, we'll be putting that stuff up for streaming. But you know, right now, the concept of the Kickstarter, which you know, just to kind of as a sidebar, you know, the dub for Aria is complete. So they're working on the final release on that, which we hopefully have out next month. But we promised the Kickstarter backers that they would have the, you know, they'd have the product before everybody else. So I'm not going to just go ahead and drop that out immediately. We are going to release standard versions of the various seasons of Aria, in 2020. And when we do that, most likely we'll put that up on the various streaming platforms at the same time.
Okay.
But the goal there was, you know, if you're a Kickstarter backer, you know, obviously paid a little bit extra to be part of that. And, you know, I want to make that, you know, some level of exclusivity to those folks until, at least for a while. I think we told them that it would be at least 6 months, which it's been more than that now.
All right. This next question kind of dovetails with this a little bit, and it'd be good to get into this. From GW Otaku, he asks, with all the corporate realignment in the last 1 to 2 years, is it now harder than ever for someone like you to license anime?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's sort of a yes or no.
I mean, I don't really, I don't know that I could, you know, say it any more gracefully than that. Yeah, but the more people there are, the more money there is, the harder it is to you know, make yourself noticed or get into the pack. But part of it also is there's so much content that you only have a certain number of people that are involved in these organizations over there. And they can work on my little deal or they can work on the big deal. And so sometimes you kind of got to get some time to actually work on some of that stuff. It is difficult to do. I mean, there's the simulcast alone. I mean, when you consider it, you know, I don't remember how many there are this season. I mean, it's a huge number, but all of the paperwork to get those done, the license agreements, the negotiation work that needs to be done, all of the materials requests, all that. I mean, there's, you know, a group in Japan that works for the licensor that handles that. Well, they have a real time commitment that has to be met in order to make sure that gets over timely so that it can be made on the simulcast. Well, they're behind schedule. That's, you know, they have a hard, fast deadline for that. That's what they're going to work on. It's tough.
Interesting. So, like, what percentage of your time, like, in an average day for you, what percentage of your time is taken up with licensing stuff anymore? Because it feels like maybe that's reduced over the last couple of years.
More than you might think. It might not be specifically licensing content, but I might be working with Japan for, for example, to look at different products that we can sell or merchandise that we can work together with the vendor or partner on. I spend a little bit of time each day. Generally, I pick a day during the week and kind of carve out, this is my data to kind of catch up on either email or phone calls or whatever. But would I say that I do less time on licensing? Yeah, probably to an extent, because we're not licensing as much. But you still have those relationships that have to be maintained. And, you know, we're looking to, for example, go back into our older catalog and release newer versions of our products. So, like, as an example, you know, we've done an upscale or an upconvert on Gravitation this summer. We did one for Boogie Pop. Neither one of those titles has been released in Japan at all in HD. So there was a whole level of discussion that had to go in place to allow that to happen. So, I mean, there's time there. That's not licensing time specifically. I'm not licensing anything. But, you know, we're maintaining the relationship and being able to reintroduce our content in a better form. You know, so I think our folks did a really great job on both of those titles in terms of the, you know, they look really good, much better, I think, than they ever have before. And we've got kudos even from the licensor, especially on Boogie Pop. They were really impressed.
Nice. Also from GW Otaku, are there plans to crowdfund more English dubs for older titles?
I mean, I'm always looking at stuff like that. I mean, honestly, it's a tough call when you look at dubbing a program. It's incredibly expensive. I mean, it really is. It's a lot of money. People don't realize, I think, sometimes how much effort is required to script, hire actors, and dub a show, especially if it's, you know, a long show, 13, 26, or whatever. So the Kickstarter concept allows you to eliminate some of the risk. Because if, let's say you bet the farm and you dub, show X and find out nobody really likes it, well, then you're taking a big loss. That's not a good thing. So it does give us the ability to kind of look at options that weren't previously available. And I think that the couple shows that we picked were titles that, it was one of those things where we think these are great titles, but we're not 100% sure that enough people would buy them in order to fund the expense. And obviously those both worked out. It was a fantastic thing. We got both seasons of Emma and all four seasons of Aria. I mean, I can't begin to tell you the last time I've seen somebody off the bat dub four seasons of a show. I mean, that's a sizable investment.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I definitely think that that's something that's always kind of in the back of my mind in terms of, is there something out there that we think that people really would like to see a dub for, but aren't loud enough about it right now that we could test the water with something like a Kickstarter. I mean, certainly that's options that we definitely pay attention to.
All right. I mean, do you think you'll do something like that in the near future, or is sort of off the table for the time being?
Well, I mean, to a point, I want to finish the two Kickstarters we have that are in process. Aria will be completed, I would say, by the end of, the next few weeks. But, I mean, I don't want to have 11 Kickstarters running at the same time, so I would like to kind of close down at least the Aria one before we would do another.
Okay. Dark Primus asks, it's cool that Nozomi has licensed SZS. Are they planning on handling the copious amount of on-screen? How are you planning on handling the copious amount of on-screen Japanese text?
That's kind of one of those, we are not 100% sure how we're going to do that yet.
So still figuring it out. That's
I mean, it's definitely going to be a challenge. Another challenge for this show that I really haven't told anybody, but the there are no scripts for this show. They were all lost.
Really?
So all of the translation work that has to be done for the show has to be done by ear.
Oh my god!
Which means it's gonna be a huge project.
It's gonna take some time.
So yeah, it's gonna take some time. So, but I'm aware that that's an issue. We did conquer that at one point when we did the His and Hers release. The Blu-ray spec for subtitles, I mean, I know Justin has probably talked about this on, different spots over the course of time, is not even nearly even as flexible as the DVD side. So I'm not really 100% sure right now how we're going to do it. We're going to figure out a way. I just don't know how yet.
Well, you'll figure it out at some point. Okay, Sewing Rose asks, this is a good question. How badly have the distribution problems that the music industry is facing with Direct Shot affecting anime distribution for you?
It definitely has affected us. One of the major vendors in our market, Discotech, has been whacked hard by that because they had their content being distributed by a music distributor. So it is, let me kind of put it this way. I've been doing logistics for a lot of years. I mean, and our staff here, I mean, there's a lot of people who have been in e-commerce for years and years and years. And we've watched this like slow train wreck of that group happen in over the last year or two. And it's mind blowing. It's absolutely mind blowing that a company that large with that much money could mess that up that much and still not be able to clean it up months and months and months later. But distribution is a tough piece. I mean, when you look at whether you're talking with, any of the other majors, Funimation uses a distributor to actually pick, pack, and ship and sell their products. So does most places do. So if you get into somebody who doesn't have their house in order and really can't get their warehouse functioning, or decides to change software in the middle of the Christmas season, or suddenly lays off a bunch of their staff or whatever, I mean, there are all these challenges that these various places hit, it destroys the ability to meet the customer's need for product and to meet expectations. And it's actually been rather disturbing to watch. I'm sure it's hurt since Direct Shot does a lot of the music industry. I know it's really hurt a lot of the indie music shops.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a tragic situation with that. It is weird. You're exactly right. It is a very strange thing to have happened.
You would think that, you know, a company that size would have a good plan, but they certainly did not.
Right. Okay. I think this is our last question maybe two more. Adam Zalonis asks, are there possibly plans to obtain the rights to any more older titles from the 70s to the 90s?
I'm always looking for old products. Always. It just depends on what we can find. If we can get the licensing in a way that, that's a reasonable price. If you can dig it out from whatever committee has long been disbanded, those are the biggest issues when you get to older programs.
Right. Right. Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of finding them. I would love to be able to put out some, there's a lot of classics that, I would love to have out. I just haven't been able to some of these things take us years to unravel.
Right. You basically have to go through a graveyard and dig it out yourself. Like that's.
Well, if let's say a committee ran a program in like 1992. Okay.
Sure.
And there was 12 different companies that were on this committee, because there always is a ton of them. And that show, obviously it's 20, 30 years old at this point. Sometimes these companies don't even remember they were on the committees. The people that were on the committee have moved on. They've died. They've retired or whatever. And so you maybe find one person on the committee and say, well, I really like to work with you on this title. And they're like, well, you got to get the committee's approval. Well, then you got to search out, who are all the people on the committee, which sometimes they don't even know. Then when you figure that out, then you have to approach each one of those organizations and say, that committee that was disbanded 30 years ago, do you know who was the one that was left in charge of, these rights?
Right.
And sometimes they don't know, and then they got to see if they can find a contract that's 30 years old in a drawer. It's a significant challenge. And that's not a challenge specifically only to anime. I mean, it can be a challenge to regular media content, too. I mean, there's several old shows that I watched when I was a kid that you still can't find on a home media channel anywhere. So it happens.
Okay. Cowboy B-Boy asks, with the old dub of Gundam Seed only being included in the Ultra Edition, will it be on the Standard Edition Blu-ray?
No.
No. All right.
It will only be available on the Ultra Edition, and it will be available on a SDBD.
Okay. All right. Last one from Land of Obscusion. We already kind of covered this a little bit, but are you getting to the point where you might actually be running out of new Gundam titles to release? At this point, all you really have left beyond re-releases on Blu-ray are the various SD productions and some one-off OVAs and G-Savior.
Well, I don't know that I would say that that's the case, because there's new product that's come out.
Sure.
That we haven't released yet. There's several new series that have been released in the last few years that we haven't got to. So, I mean, we're going to keep going with Gundam until we run out of Gundam, and then we hope that they'll make more Gundam. I mean, that's kind of where we've been at for a while. It is my hope to have the customers be able to have the full Gundam gamut if I can make that happen.
I don't think you need to worry about them making more Gundam.
Well, no. I mean, there's going to be... I'm talking about in terms of, they can't make 14 Gundam series every year. It is going to take time to make them. But, I mean, we've been trying to do... And my original concept with Gundam when we started working with Sunrise on this was to kind of have two tracks. We would have one track that would be the classic stuff that had already been released. And then we would have the other track, which would be newer products. So that's why you saw, at the same time that we were putting out Gundam Wing, we also had Gundam Thunderbolt coming out, right?
Right.
Versus saying, we're going to start at the very beginning and go all the way to the end. We just kind of broke it into two pieces so that people who maybe really just wanted to see the newer stuff would have the opportunity without having to wait until, 2022, right?
Sure.
That's kind of how that whole thought process when we did our release schedule was built. Part of it also was determined upon the availability of HD material. For example, when we originally released Gundam After War, there was no HD video for that. Now that there is HD video for that, we're going to go back and release that in that format. So pretty much everything that we have will be HD. And there's a couple, you know, one-offs that probably aren't going to, we'll probably never go back and do Blu-rays for, but for the most part, they should all be there.
Cool. All right. Okay. That's our last question. And as always, it's been a pleasure to have you, buddy. I'm always happy to have you on.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, our holiday's coming and, you know, the holiday sale's coming, and I'm kind of excited that all the stuff that we've got coming, the customers when they come to the site are going to be able to see. We've got some good sales coming up, and we've added some features to the site that allow people to, break their purchase up into payments and, looking at how they can, manage their order volume and the things that they want to purchase. So, all I can say is it's holiday, come over and check us out. There are some changes just from the fact that the industry has changed. Right. I mean, and that it does affect, what can be put on sale and for what price and so on.
Okay. All right. Well, check them out, rightstuff.com. Thanks again, Sean.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Sean for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, wherever you can find podcasts, you can find Ancast. Leave us comments. It helps. Anyway, I hope you have a great holiday weekend, and we'll see you all next week.